Welcome everyone to What the Force, and welcome to an amazing interview with a member of the Lucasfilm Story Group, who I'd like to imagine as a perfect Venn diagram between Lego and Star Wars. Welcome, Leland Chi.
Hello.
Hi. I'm so excited to have you on the podcast. This kind of all started after I just shot you a DM and said, hey, please.
Yeah, and luckily the PR people here said that gave the go ahead, so I'm glad to be on.
So, I mean, I've kind of had this idea, I know that you're deep into understanding everything that's going on in Star Wars and everything that kind of happens. So I didn't necessarily want to talk about kind of what is happening, but in a way, how it happens, a day in the life of Leland in a way. Because I think that people sometimes come up with these ideas about what your life is like working for Lucasfilm and, trying to figure out, hey, how does it all fit together? So kind of starting out, how is your day going, Leland?
Well, we're ready to head into the break. So our offices are closed for the holidays. So it's mm-hmm. nice to be able to get out and sort of recharge a bit. So we're at the point where we're winding down. So it's not a typical day. And not that there is a typical day. I don't know if there is a typical day because we touch on so many things. Whether it's books or games or TV or whatever, it varies for whatever the needs of the project are, who are the people that are involved. Mm-hmm. There are some creators that we interact with more than others. So it really just, it really varies from day to day.
It sounds like the project work itself is almost like a wave pool. Like maybe it comes in waves and you're busy for a while and then...
No. There's no wave.
No, it's just always busy. There's just it's always a tsunami.
There's always stuff. There's always a tsunami. Yes. And it's
just what's in the tsunami.
Trying to stay on top of it. Yeah. Because the stuff that we're looking at, sometimes it's big picture stuff. Sometimes it's the most minute details that we're getting asked about. So we are just trying to, stay on top of it.
So your job title, I believe, is the Keeper of the Holocron. Is that officially was that on your job?
No.
Offer letter?
That title came about because when I first started, I started in licensing. And mm-hmm. specifically when I started for licensing, it was as part of the deal for Wizards of the Coast, which creates the Magic card game. They mm-hmm. had the license for the role-playing
D20?
Game.
D20? Yeah, D20,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, the D20 role-playing game. And so... Yeah. As part of that license, the director of publishing at the time, Lucy Wilson, and Bill Slavicek at Wizards of the Coast decided that, we need to have some sort of repository for this information. So we're going to have somebody build a database that stores. And this is 2000. This is year 2000. So there's not really...
So just after Phantom Menace came out, mid Attack of the Clones.
Right, right. Up. And Wikipedia does not exist. Mm-hmm. Online, there's somebody that has sort of the unofficial, Bob Vitas's unofficial encyclopedia, I think was around. Mm-hmm. But we really needed something internal to track not only things that had been done before, but also things that were currently in development. Mm-hmm. And their role-playing game was going to draw from content from everywhere, from books. So that's when it was decided that they would build this database. I come in and I build the database and then the director of publishing, Lucy Wilson, says, so what do you want to name it? So instantly I was like, this is the Holocron. This has to be the Holocron.
It is.
Yeah.
So, it only makes sense.
So that's how the Holocron came to be. And then when Wizards printed their role-playing game, they had me listed as the Keeper of the Holocron. So that's where that came from.
So your job title is not actually Keeper of the Holocron, which I am incredibly disappointed about.
Not technically. And for the longest time, I kept my job title. The job title that was as it was posted was Continuity Database Administrator. And so I...
Less sexy, I'm sorry.
But if I were ever looking for employment elsewhere, database administrator would be a skill that people would recognize.
Yes.
They might not recognize Keeper of the Holocron.
So is it a SQL database?
What do you mean SQL? What does that mean?
It's a programming code. Is it built out of just an Access database? It's FileMaker.
FileMaker.
Oh, FileMaker. Okay. Yes.
When I started, the goal was to pull in as much information as I could from every source possible. So when you say Access, there was a product called Behind the Magic that I had worked before I joined licensing. I was a game tester at LucasArts.
Okay.
And while I was at LucasArts, there was a product called Behind the Magic. It was a multimedia CD-ROM that had deleted scenes before DVDs were a thing. It had the scripts. It had videos and audio. There was stuff on collectibles and toys. So it really encompassed the gambit of all Star Wars. And that was done in Access. So when I started FileMaker, I ported everything from Access. I took Steve Sansweet's and printed Star Wars Encyclopedia. That went into it. And it was just basically anything I can get my hands on, I put into the database.
Like Rancho Obi-Wan? Steve Sansweet?
Yes. Steve Sansweet wrote the Star Wars Encyclopedia.
That's awesome. That first version,
the starry background, the printed encyclopedia. It was called the Star Wars Encyclopedia.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. That's awesome. Yeah. So you had like almost media files mixed with kind of, I don't know, tidbits.
It's mostly just text based with the way that it's handled in FileMaker. There are links to certain images, but the images are there just for a quick reference. We have other assets that go into other sort of asset management systems.
Do other people like have access to update entries? Kind of like
they have access to read the database, but I'm the only person that put stuff into the database. Yeah, I'm the only person with the right access.
So can they send you like a list of things and then it like updates certain records? And I'm weirdly fascinated by this. I'm so sorry. It just seems like a lot to keep track of, and like
when we're looking at stuff for approvals is when I'm entering it into the database, and it goes into this sort of holding section of the database where this isn't where it's not quite final, but this is the stuff that's in process,
in draft.
And then in theory, like when it becomes final, then it moves into sort of like the released version of the content. But it's all text-based, with just maybe a representative image if such a thing even exists.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, and I've heard that it's pretty detailed, like even down to the smell of certain things, like it can include that kind of information.
Smell is not so much. Yeah, we do kind of get asked. We have gotten that asked, especially when you have things like the parks that are interested in, because we've never, you know, before the parks, and we had a little bit of the void experience, Secrets of the Empire, where they what does Mustafar smell like? And then,
burning.
Yeah, so they go through different versions of campfire smell to get the right one that is pleasant, so.
Like, yeah, what does Mustafar smell like? I'm guessing that they're trying to get everything right for Galaxy's Edge. Like, maybe that's kind of the direction, and so they're trying to understand, hey, what has been thought about?
And you think about it, and it's like, well, do you really want to have what Mustafar smells like, or do you want something that is an appealing representation of what it might smell like? That's not going to make people sick or whatever. Yeah, so
yeah, it's yeah. Something that people can kind of understand and process, and not like realistic, because I mean, this is a space fantasy fairy tale, right? So it doesn't necessarily need to be accurate.
Yeah, yeah.
If it's unenjoyable.
But yeah, smells are a very small portion of the database. Tiny.
A tiny, like when they needed to insert a smell situation. It's so funny because when the first time that I ever heard about you, it was actually on a Reddit post. Somebody was really confused about how they kept canon continuitous, and they mentioned you, and literally the follow-up comment was, oh Lord, to have that job, that must be terrible. So would you like to clarify anything for those people out there about how terrible is your job, Leland?
My job is, it's pretty awesome. I am a lifelong Star Wars fan, and you know, always paid attention to it. Things didn't quite line up. So being in the position where I am, it's a dream come true. I mean, if there's a definition of dream job, this is it, because A, it didn't exist when I was growing up, and when I was starting to enter the workforce, there wasn't a lot of people looking for Star Wars experts.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's true. It's not a job title that really existed.
I graduated in the early 90s, so there wasn't even signs of that Star Wars was going to return. There wasn't any guarantee that Star Wars was going to return. When it did finally come back, no one could have been more happier, because I had lived a huge portion of my life, my childhood, I had Star Wars, and then there was no Star Wars. And so I know what it's like to not have Star Wars for a long period of time, which I don't think anyone else, you know, new generations
don't know what that's like. Yeah,
they don't know what it's like, and they're never going to know what it's like.
Yeah, and I feel like that maybe is why, oh, some fans almost like possessively hang on to the remembrance of their childhood ways, because like they remember what it's like to not have Star Wars coming out, and they're not adjusted to like maybe having so much Star Wars
come out. Yeah.
And there is a lot of Star Wars, and it seems like...
And there's a lot of Star Wars for different types of people.
Yeah, yeah.
There's Star Wars for younger people. There's Star Wars for older people. There's Star Wars for people that are into the minutiae. I mean, it's catering to a lot of different types of fans.
Does it make you worried about like having a high barrier to getting into it? Or is it more like whatever Star Wars somebody kind of comes in at is their Star Wars?
If people are not getting into it for whatever reason, then yeah, that is a worry.
Because it feels daunting or something. Like
yeah.
That. I don't think it is, though.
Yeah. And by having things like whether it's Lego or whether it's Galaxy of Adventures, there are different ways to enter into Star Wars where it doesn't have to be daunting.
Yeah, and I think that that's okay too, is like if Lego Freemakers is your Star Wars, then Lego Freemakers is your Star Wars.
I would love for that to be people's Star Wars.
I love Roger so much. Like, yeah, he's the best. He's so funny. I especially loved him in like the Lego All-Stars that has been coming out.
Yeah.
He's just solid.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Good job, Matt Wood, on continuing to do that voice for nearly 20 years.
Yeah, and it's amazing because people don't give Matt the respect for the comedic timing that Roger has. Like, it is so perfect. Good. And he had been doing battle droids, you know, for a decade before that. Mm-hmm. To do it in this way and to, I mean, I didn't realize that he sort of had it in and to be in that character the way that Roger is. It's not that different than what battle droids were in Cold War. And it's just shifting it the little bit of, okay, now he's not the bad guy anymore. He's the protagonist. And
it's all of those memories. He's layered on top to become like this amazing, like, oh, heart-filled droid in so many ways. It's awesome.
Yes. Yeah. No, I love Roger. I loved, and it was great to get him in that droidography book. We were wrestling with the idea of who should be our guide in this book. Mm-hmm. Was it going to be C-3PO? Was it going to be... And somewhere along the line, we were just thinking, you know what? Roger's important to the brand because he is he's recognizable whether you've seen Freemaker Adventures or not.
Yeah.
Because everyone knows battle droids from the prequels. So you have sort of that instant recognizability of him just being a battle droid. But if you know further, you know that his story crosses paths across all the eras. He was the type that would document this stuff as all stars, that he was very thorough and he remembers everything. I mean, you have C-3PO and you have the thing about whether C-3PO had his memory wiped. Did he get his memory back or what? You know, you have those questions. And with Roger, you don't have those questions.
And R2 can't really talk, so.
And R2 can't really talk. And you know what? He's not, he's probably not sharing everything that he knows.
No, he watches.
Yeah.
That's what he does.
And no one thinks to even ask him, like, oh, you knew Anakin. Yeah, hey. You were at the Jedi Temple. You were at the Jedi Temple when, okay, interesting. I watch episode 3 and you see R2. When do you see R2 after Order 66?
Well, so C-3PO and R2 have a brief conversation when Anakin talks to Padme.
Yes.
And he's like, everything's going to be okay. I just have to do this one last mission.
What is R2 thinking right there? What has R2 seen at that moment?
Well, he says something to C-3PO like, I don't know that Anakin's himself. And C-3PO is like, he's just under a lot of stress.
Yeah. And really, R2 is like, oh my God, you don't understand what has just happened.
What has just happened? Oh, no.
Yeah. I got to tell you what I just... It's like, no, don't, Archer, don't worry about it. Don't, you know?
No, it's, he's just, he's under a lot of stress. Like, C-3PO, come on. I love that moment so much because it almost reflects, in some ways, C-3PO is almost like an analog or like an avatar of Anakin. He's like, no, 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 don't pay attention to this, like, hot mess in front of you. It's fine. And R2-D2 is almost like an analog or an avatar for Padme, who's like freaking out, like so worried. And no, it's fine. It's fine. Don't worry about
it. Wow, you have thought about this stuff a lot.
What? Yes. No, of course. I have, but that's okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's how I enjoy Star Wars.
Absolutely.
Thinking about things too much.
Yes.
So can you walk me through kind of like a what do you do day to day? Like, you show up, you pat Yoda on the head, or you give him a high five, the Yoda statue?
I'm through a different entrance, so I actually don't walk past the Yoda statue anymore. I'm not quite in that same building.
Mm-hmm.
I used to be at, when I was at LucasArts, there would be always be Star Wars post. The way that I come in now, I go through stairwells. There's not much to speak of. Yeah, yeah. We do have a thing on our floor that says, like, you know, a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, in big giant letters on the wall. You may have seen pictures of this. Mm-hmm. It's right outside our elevators, but I don't come that way. I come a different way, so I don't even see that.
And I'm assuming there's like a security guard, and like you have to like show your ID every day. And like...
Yes, yes. And then we've got the stormtrooper patrols that are going, you know, every 15 minutes. So
the security droids that all look like K2SO.
Yes, yes, yes. I get through the doors part everywhere I want. I come in and I check emails, and I'll have like a meeting with our games group to talk about character abilities or character looks or the story for this game. So we have regular syncs with several of our teams to discuss whatever the issues are for that week.
Mm-hmm. So we've got a question, we have a new thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's like a standing meeting for things like that. Publishing tends, at least for me, it tends to be sort of project-based. So whenever there's a project that the editors would like me to look at, or if we have an author coming in who they want to get a little bit of story perspective, they might have myself, they might have Pablo Hidalgo, they might have Matt Martin, or any sort of combination of the three of us in on that meeting.
That would be like pretty intimidating, I think, to meet with all three of you. It's probably really important.
it really is. A lot of it is just based on whether we're available. And, you know, sometimes some of us might be traveling or whatnot. So it's really based on availability, because, we would love to have a hand and or at least have some visibility into everything, but sometimes it's just not possible. And that's just the three of us. There's misnomer that the story group is us three, and that's it, because we tend to be the ones that are more recognizable amongst fans.
Yeah, and publicly facing and public facing, put yourself out there. But there's also like Carrie, who I know of, right? Who was kind of from a story group perspective, helping with The Last Jedi. Ryan talks about a lot. He talked about her a fair amount in interviews when talking about the script. And
So there are so many people in story group that people have no
clue.
If you go back at some of the celebration videos, you can see some of the other folks that are on here. But they'll be working on things that touch. Their focus might be strictly on film, or their focus might strictly be on TV. So. There's different people that have sort of different
there's
functions.
Probably a whole subdivision for now the like streaming shows that are going to be started, like The Mandalorian. Mm-hmm. There's probably like a need for that kind of focus for a while.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's kind of probably shifting all the time what the focus is, depending on what the timeline is for what projects are coming out.
Exactly. Yeah. But there's always going to be TV stuff, and there's always going to be, you know, people looking at film space and the game space and the publishing space and the R space. Mm-hmm. So we'll have different people focused on that.
So I've heard that there's a cafeteria. Is that where you eat lunch?
You know what? I spend most of my time in my office. So me, I'll just bring lunch and eat at my desk most of the time. I know I probably shouldn't, but yeah.
That's a really bad habit. You need to get her out and walk.
I try to do that too. I mean, our location is amazing. We are in the Presidio in San Francisco, so there's the marina, which is like a 10-minute walk.
So you're in the Presidio, you're not in the Lucasfilm headquarters out on the other side of the bay.
Presidio is Lucasfilm headquarters.
By the bridge.
So roughly where, if you watch Star Trek, where Starfleet Academy would be, or anyway.
Where the military base used to be.
Lucasfilm is based here. Up in the North Bay is Skywalker Ranch.
Oh,
so
okay.
Skywalker Sound is up there. And then if you've seen pictures of Skywalker Ranch, you always see that old Victorian house. That's what they call the main house. That's over in Skywalker
yes.
Ranch.
Right.
And
because there is two locations.
Yeah, I worked there 2000 to 2002. Then we moved to, they built another facility called Big Rock. So I moved over to Big Rock.
Mm-hmm.
Big Rock is where animation would eventually move into. And in 2005 is when we came over from Big Rock to here.
I can't believe how huge you are. You need like three separate locations.
Most of those places aren't part of Lucas. Big Rock is not used by Lucasfilm. That's all part of George Lucas's properties.
Okay. And especially with the sale and everything like that, things probably had to get reorganized and it sounds fun. So I'm guessing that because of how close Pablo has always been to Andy when she's asking him questions on Rebels Recon,
we're all in this building. ILM is in this building. The games group is in this building. All our business units are all here. Product development is here. So yeah, the Presidio location is what is considered Lucasfilm headquarters.
That's great. I mean, it seems like it's also more centrally located, so you don't have to drive like a million miles to get
there. I started at LucasArts, we were in separate locations. I mean, we were within 10 minutes or 15 minutes driving distance. We're not across country or even across an ocean or anything like that. But we do have some folks down at the Walt Disney Studio in Burbank. So
right.
There is a little bit of
a leakage south.
With our group. Yeah.
They've gone south.
A little bit. And ILM, they have different locations elsewhere.
Right.
So
for the graphics and everything like that, like all of that, they need.
There's a group in London that is close to the Pinewood Studios where they do the shooting.
Right.
And there's a location in Canada, and then the animation studio in Singapore.
Oh, okay. Wow. I really had no clue. It was that huge and spread out and all over the place. That's awesome.
For what ILM does, they are a little bit spread out.
Well, just like all of the different arms of ILM and Skywalker Sound and Lucasfilm, like it's really fascinating to me how big it is. Do you have like a number of how many employees Lucasfilm has?
I know in around our area, I think it's around 1,200. It's not massive. It's not like nothing compared to what Disney has.
Right.
And even so what we try to do is we try to be as lean as possible.
Right. Because it's also about, I think that you probably also bring in contractors. Like, I mean, obviously the authors are kind of on contract when they writing a book or, maybe somebody's in there just for a short period of time and it's on contract to do a specific thing. And it does sort of keep.
And it's same thing with the directors and writers and on the shows. Yeah.
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 Wow. That's really neat, actually. So, okay.
It takes a lot of people to make Star Wars. And and some people are, fortunate for me, I get to work on Star Wars all the time. And a lot of the time, it's just people that are coming in to work on the one project.
Mm-hmm. So how much Lego do you have in your office?
I actually don't have any. I don't know if I have any. Most of the Lego that I have, I bring home and my kids.
Okay, how much Lego do you have at home? You love, like, I just imagine, like, with your name associated with all of the Lego Star Wars titles, almost like you know Lego so well.
In terms of like book stuff, I tend to have a hand in a lot of the book stuff that we do. Mm-hmm. So Lego is just another part of that. Now, right. the Lego thing mostly came in when I started working on FreeMaker Adventures. And so that was my first opportunity to take part in a writer's room, which was an amazing experience. So I would sit in with the writers and executive producers, Bill Motz and Bob Roth. I mean, the show was very much, it's their show. And then I was brought in as sort of the Star Wars expert to make sure that we were getting the Star Wars right of it all. In support of the writers and the producers.
To contribute to the overall, like, just feel that it's Star Wars, right?
Yeah, and just making sure they're getting the rules of Star Wars as they apply to Lego right.
That's an interesting way of putting that, because it does kind of have its own
It has its feel. Own set of rules, yeah. And there's things like force building, concepts that had some were coming from the games, but then when they got to the show, it actually became a whole bigger thing.
Its own mechanism in a way, and
with its own mythology.
Yeah, in their way, there's like Lego canon versus like regular canon in a way.
In a way, yeah, because building is very much a component of Lego. That mm-hmm. is a component that you don't have in Star Wars proper. So.
Yeah, in it. Yeah. All right. Who is your BFF on the Lucasfilm campus?
I share an office with Pablo.
Oh.
And Pablo and I have shared an office for the past 7 years. So,
fellow Canadian. Hello, yeah, Pablo.
He was here earlier. He actually just left. So I was at Games for 3 years, and then I moved to licensing in 2000. And when I started in licensing, it was the same month that Pablo started in online. So we have actually sort of been on this journey together since that. We went to the first new employee orientation together. And I'm not sure if Lucasfilm had understood how much geekery they had just brought into their midst.
Consumed? Like,
yeah.
How can we handle this much?
Yeah, but I remember walking out of that new employee orientation and Pablo and I having like sort of just these grand dreams of what we would see our involvement with Star Wars become and just how we wanted to see things. And then in 2013 is when we were brought into the story group, and it was just sort of a culmination of those 13 years of oh my
you
gosh.
High-fived.
And something like
he
that.
He got himself a coffee and you got yourself yes. a water.
yeah. Well, the coffee thing is, it's just so weird how things like that become a thing. But yeah, that's so funny.
Like, that's the thing. Like, we only see as fans, we only see this, like, I don't know, weird, like, view into what happens kind of behind the curtain. We, you know?
Well, yeah. There's the Star Wars show version of Lucasfilm, which yes. is, we have musicals and people dancing and Mandalorians dancing all the time, which is an amazing view of Star Wars. If that's how everybody thinks what Lucasfilm is like, I'm perfectly fine with that.
Pablo regularly spends time staring out the window.
Yes. Yeah. With his finger. Yeah. I love what they allow the Star Wars show people to do. Yeah, it's so amazing that they, and Scott Bromley, who sort of, it's his vision. It's his vision when they do the craziest stuff, and he's the voice of Yoda, the Yoda statue.
Yes.
He's the guy. He's big business. He's the big business guy that especially during like the first season, they had business. That's Scott Bromley. It's business. Yeah. But it's such a whacked out view, and I love it. It's so surreal.
But really, it's more just, hey, you know, what are we currently working on? What problems do we have to solve?
Absolutely. Yeah. And the beauty of what we get to do as part of Story Group is we have insight into everything that we're working on. So if there mm-hmm. are connections that can be made between different projects, or if there's a certain thing that we can seed in, we are in the position to be able to do that.
Yeah. And I think it was Jason Fry told me that he occasionally gets a call up when he was writing the novelization, is like, make sure to put this in. And he was like, what?
Yeah. Yeah.
Usually it's that like those be, little things.
Yeah. Those little things are usually a story person that are like, hey, would be a great idea to sort of seed this in, or this fits yeah. in just perfectly. Yeah. So that's usually coming from story group, because I don't see that. I don't see how that would come from anywhere else.
Just make sure to do this one thing. That's all. Oh, okay. And then, you know, we find out later on that, oh, L3's brain is inside of the Falcon. And that's why that was put in there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, yeah, I heard that, the discussion about it. And Jason had said in the interview, that wasn't Jason's idea. That was that was an idea that was from Legends. And so, and also part of that is from, you know, the writers on Solo, John Kasdan specifically.
Mm-hmm.
He was very much a fan of a lot of that expanded universe material. So a lot of people think that it's us that are inserting references to Teras Kasi or some of these other references, but a lot of it came from him.
And it comes from the creators themselves, either seeing some sort of parallel or wanting to say, hey, this was important and this is a really cool way they could go. Let me put that in there, kind of adding to the sandbox in a way.
Yeah, yeah. So it can come from any number of, and people that are working on Star Wars, you know, they love Star Wars, and they bring with them their Star Wars experience, and their Star Wars experience isn't always just the films. They bring in whatever they loved about Star Wars. So if they loved, you know, the video games, or if they love the books, they'll bring that perspective with them coming in. So when we had Freemaker Adventures, when they have the wheel. I mean, it wasn't my idea to put the wheel in. That was in the first, you know, treatment that I saw. And I'm like, they're talking about the wheel from the Marvel comics? And it's like, wow, okay. This is, now I have an idea of where you're coming from. And
interesting.
I can work with that. Yeah.
I find it just super fascinating because we're in this non-linear, in a way, because each project is sort of non-linear, where it goes in like the continuity, big continuity, the big timeline of canon. It could jump from, you know, oh, we've got episode 9 coming out, but before that, we're going to probably see The Mandalorian, and we're going to see more Resistance. And, you know, we saw Solo, and we're going to jump back to the prequels era for Master and Apprentice, and of course, Queen Shadow. Like, it's all over the place as far as where we're telling stories, but because people are also bringing it in their own version of Star Wars, it's almost iterating on the fly. It's awesome.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I'm really excited. No, because it's just so cool.
Sometimes it comes from, you know, that's how George made his movies out of order. And when he got to Clone Wars, it's just like,
it's like,
oh my gosh, you want to do an episode that's a prequel to our first episode, but we're in season 3? Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. That was very,
let's go back
very
in time much for a while.
That was, so you have the aspect of that's how George worked. And then you have mm-hmm. the aspect of where can we tell stories? You know, is there freedom to tell stories in this part of the timeline where there might not be freedom to tell stories in this other part of the timeline because maybe we've got something else in the works. So we've done a pretty good job of not getting ahead of ourselves, ahead of the movies in terms of our storytelling. So you don't see a lot of post-9 stuff, because that's for the film.
That's
to tell
for
those
the
stories.
Film. Yeah.
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 Unless it's a sort of, the only time that we've actually done it is we've had a couple of books where it's like, omnisciently, this book is told way, way, way in the future at some indeterminate time where you can sort of reflect back on the entirety of Star Wars. We've done that a couple of times.
I don't.
Galaxy of Heroes, the game Galaxy of Heroes is an example of that.
And semi-certain point of view, the last story, sort of the one, the Will's talking about. I mean, but that book is, you know, for fun in some ways. I love that book so much. It is fascinating. I just love, like, unreliable narrators.
Yeah. And it's and it gives the authors the freedom to sort of explore things where, you know, otherwise they would have been completely constrained.
So what have you worked on that has been your favorite thing to storytell? Because I think one thing that I've heard it like from Jason, but like Jason Fry. But one thing about the Lucas Story Group is that you guys are storytellers. You're contributing to the overall story as well as the individual stories that you're telling. What is the favorite sort of property or project that you've worked on?
My role at Lucasfilm hasn't changed that much. I mean, I've always been, you know, I've been the keeper of the hologram for so long. And part of that was when I was doing that earlier on, it was just like not letting our creators, our writers, letting their vision come through. And I'm there just to support the vision. And that's mm-hmm. always how I view my particular role within story, is I am there to support other people's visions. Freemaker Adventures is sort of like the one sort of chance that I've gotten to sort of break out of that and mm-hmm. actually contribute more so than usual to the crafting of the story. And that was just because I loved working with Bill and Bob, and I loved what we were doing in. And there was, this freedom to create a whole new mythology without some of the confines mm-hmm. of, yes, we can say this is the first Kyber crystal lightsaber, because in Legos that would work. We might not be able to do that in other storytelling mediums.
It's like Lego is like fuzzy canon. Like it is kind of in an unreliable way, you know?
They dubbed it canon adjacent, which I am not disagreeing.
Canon adjacent.
Yeah, that was the term that Bob Roth came up with. So
I view it like it's almost like a window by which you can view the fundamentals of Star Wars through.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
A different angle. But again, it's like through like a Lego window.
Yeah, yeah. But then when you get something like Roger and Droidography, you know, things can seep cross into the larger universe. If it makes sense.
Because kind of like myth, and what you're doing is building modern day myth. Like this is myth for us as like modern humans, when we never like grew up in a time when myth was something that we had, where stories, with the exception of sort of like folk tales from our society, Johnny Appleseed or, George Washington cutting down the cherry tree. Those are our myths of our uh-huh. of our days. But this is like complex, you know, can be complex and can be very simple, you know, myth making that is adding to the overall story, trying to tell in some ways humanistic themes, love, family, you know, becoming.
And hopefully that's what all storytelling does. I mean, not just, that's what storytellers do. So I don't think it's necessarily unique to Star Wars. What's unique to Star Wars is we are able to do it across multiple platforms and have it all try to make it fit together.
Yeah.
As opposed to having a separate cinematic universe versus their comic universe versus their TV universe. Star Wars is in the unique position where we try to keep it one timeline.
I would say from a property perspective of, you know, like having video games and comics and all of the different media, movies, television shows, animation, all together, this is probably the most ambitious storytelling effort ever.
I wouldn't disagree with that, because it's an insane proposition to get all these different disparate groups working on the same page, because everyone's focused on what they're working on, but they're focused on, you know, their film or their game or their book. And it's sort of up to our group to try to distill those visions into sort of one cohesive story.
And if there's mistakes where things overlap a little bit, that's okay. It's myth.
Yeah. There can be different legends and different mm-hmm. versions and different points of view for those stories. Sure.
I think that's where unreliable narrators are like king, because they're like, was that actually true? Pablo probably loves them because it's like, maybe it was true.
Yeah. Yeah. And it definitely gives, you know, creators.
It probably adds a little bit of variance though to the database, to the holocron.
Yeah, sometimes. I mean, we, you know, generally what you see in the films is a pretty accurate representation of what's happening. Generally what you see in the shows is an accurate representation of what's happening, unless it's some sort of weird vision or some thing like that. But it provides a good foundation of what the true version of events are.
So how many entries is the Holocron at today?
Let me look.
Because I think it was 80,000 earlier in 2018.
Yeah. 82,000. Today it's 82,727.
Wow.
That's what it is today. That is such a, it is a little bit of an arbitrary number. I mean, because there are things in the Holocron where it's like, okay, that unnamed background character, they get an entry in the Holocron. This character's name that was just name dropped, they get an entry in the Holocron. So the number, I'm not sure how much weight I give to that number.
Yeah.
And a lot of it is how I was able to put information into the Holocron. If I had, for example, when we were doing the Old Republic MMO, they had thousands of characters. And if I were to try to input those individually, it would be prohibitive to get every single character. But if they give me an Excel sheet with 1,000 characters and 3,000 different tech modifications, boom, I put that in there, and my Holocron has just gone up by 4,000 entries in a matter of minutes. So the number doesn't really, I wouldn't put too much weight on the number, because so much of that is based on how I was able to put information into the Holocron.
Right. And some might be, it's like a one entry, but it's a large amount of information.
Yep.
Something.
Absolutely. Yeah. So when you go to the Luke Skywalker, and there's, you know, pages and pages and tons, you know, dozens and dozens of different sources for where that information comes from. There's a lot more to that than there is to random background character in Solo, who just, maybe we don't even have a name, maybe we have the actor's name and where they, what scene they were in, and that's about it.
Therm Scissorpunch caught a whole Denny's card, and we don't know hardly anything about him.
No,
people
want to
know more about Therm Scissorpunch.
I want to know about Therm Scissorpunch. Yeah. Yeah. And the thing is, you don't know what's gonna, like,
what's gonna pop.
Would Therm Scissorpunch be as popular if he looked like that but had a different name? I don't know.
Yeah,
so much of that is in the naming of the character, and then there's also the look of the character you have to sort of consider, and it's the combination of cool looking character with a cool name. Yes, they're gonna get a Denny's car.
We like Therm Scissorpunch, we like the cut of his jib.
But unfortunately, sometimes like the timing of when these things get created aren't as conducive to, say, like an action figure. I don't know if Therm's gotten an action figure. I don't think he has.
I don't know. But like Constable Zuvio has. So where are we at? Like, why? Why?
And that comes from when Consumer Products does their line plan, sometimes they do it when they don't have the full scope of what will end up in the final film. And so sometimes you just have to purely go by, like, okay, this design looks cool. And we cross our fingers that they'll be, you know, be featured prominently. And you won't know until the final cut of the film whether actually they're going to make it or not. So
unless they tell you, like, this particular one is like really important or something, or they must have an action figure.
Generally doesn't happen that way, because I don't know how much assurance, especially with a background character like that. There's no guarantee.
Only main characters.
Yeah. And I don't think anyone knew at that time whether he was going to make the cut or not, because it just hadn't been decided yet.
Yeah, because a lot happens like in the edit room, like, an example, Han Solo's dice being kind of left out of The Force Awakens in the edit room, but then being featured prominently in both The Last Jedi and then thus the, you know, also Solo.
That's right. Like, that's right.
You know, you kind of see these little pieces, right? And you're like,
yeah.
Oh, hey,
yeah,
we missed that bit.
And I remember the it was a big deal to get those dice in there in the first place. And then it ended up not getting it. And then they got redesigned because the original dice were just, I think they were regular dice.
Mm.
And then they ended up becoming
more Star Warsian.
Yes, yes. And I think that design came from, if I recall correctly, it came from Solo, and then it was put into Last Jedi after that design, I think, came into it after something like that. There's something strange about that.
Like Solo, they made it more of a focus to design them. And then I know the hand.
So when you see that shot, they
that shot is Ryan's hand.
Is that right? Yeah.
I think it's Ryan's hand. I think he talks about it. Like, that's actually him putting the dice in his own hand because they couldn't get Mark to do that shot or something like that. And so that's his hand in that moment.
And that would explain why that was such a sort of like a last minute addition, was because they changed the design for Solo. Because, they were just, when they were originally in A New Hope, they were just regular dice, regular gold dice.
And you can only see them in that one scene when Han kind of comes into the Falcon the first time, into the cockpit. You can only see them that one time.
And who would have known that that would become such a major thing and such an iconic representation of Han Solo? It fit the storytelling need that fit in perfectly for Last Jedi and Solo.
Like, because of the... his scoundrel with a heart of gold and the that are gold, even, like, all of that.
Oh, I didn't even think
parallels.
About it that way. Yeah, yeah. I didn't even think about the gold of it all. It was just that's just something that represents Han Solo. But the gold of it, and that's a whole, like I said, you are at a whole nother level than I am when when you're reading the symbolism into what the dice are made of.
Well, I think that it's just something that, you know, even unconsciously people do parallels because they're trying to tell something fundamental about like an emotion a character is feeling. Or, you know, in some ways we do things like this as writers or as creators to try to plug into a certain perspective or whatever. And it might not be something that is necessarily intended, but because of the cultural impacts and the society that we live in and the, you know, myth and history that we've grown up with, it does mean something. And it could be because that has been unconsciously in your mind.
Wow. Wow. That's amazing.
Or I'm just making this up as I go along.
It works. It works for me. It totally works for me.
What upcoming projects are you super personally excited for that you can share?
Well, 2019 is a pretty big year.
Yes.
As you might know. I mean, Galaxy's Edge is going to be amazing. It's something that, you know, so many of us had sort of like dreamed about but never thought that it would become a thing. And having the sort of like a front row seat to so much of the process has been amazing. And it's something that we haven't done. So I'm super excited about that. The Mandalorian, really excited about. I can't wait to you all see what we're doing with that. Both of these are sort of the uncharted territory that we haven't done with Star Wars before that is always exciting to me. And then, of course, Episode 9, we're, you know, it's going to be great to see all our favorite characters back again. And Celebration, you know, I kind of went through Celebration draw this year. So
I know. Nice to, This is going to be my first Celebration.
Oh, yeah. Celebration is always, it's always an amazing time being with so many passionate fans that share their passions in different ways, but there is the commonality that we're all fans of Star Wars. So unlike a Comic-Con, passions are different. You don't understand them all. But when you come here, there is sort of this one focus thing that we are all rallied around behind. So yeah, Celebration is amazing. And I've never been to Chicago. So that should be exciting. So I'm assuming I'm going, I haven't gotten
the official okay.
I haven't gotten the official okay, but I assume, hopefully, I'll go. So we'll see. We'll see what happens.
Well, I hope that you do get to go. I'm very excited myself. I already have my tickets and my hotel and my plane tickets, so I'm definitely going. It is happening. It's going to be amazing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it will be, because you'll be around people that love Star Wars as much as you do.
I'm so excited.
Yeah.
Thank you just for sharing a little glimpse into what you do, how you do it, you know, and just that you're a fan, which is so good.
And thank you again, thank you so much for your support. And I love getting to hear our authors and our talent talk about Star Wars and giving them their time to shine and their moments of Star Wars. And just, yeah, celebrating what we all love. Thank you.
I personally love being able to talk to, you know, fans of Star Wars that create more Star Wars. And fundamentally, like, all of the people that work for Star Wars.
I've yet to find someone that's working on Star Wars that doesn't like Star Wars.
Exactly.
Maybe it exists. I don't know, but I haven't. I've worked with a lot of people.
Creators love what they're doing. Yes. They're just fans, like, you know, transforming it into new and different ways of looking at it. And to me, that's just so great. Like, it's just it makes me really happy to see all of the new content coming out, the different angles, like you know, in Galaxy of Adventures, like the little shorts that we're getting, like, mm-hmm. seeing that from that view, and, like, you know, showing those to my kids and watching Resistance with my kids. It's all different ways of telling this beautiful story.
Yeah, and I've always wondered why Star Wars? Why does Star Wars inspire creators more than other franchises? And I always come back to it being George Lucas, where he would mm-hmm. they would do the making of, specifically, there's one moment in one of the making of Empire Strikes Back. They show a bunch of kids where the Star Destroyer model flying through an asteroid field, but the rocks, you know, has like little rocks being hung by string. And it was that moment, that specific moment, that because it was students doing it, it was kids doing it, it empowered future creators today to think that they could make Star Wars. And there was something that George Lucas fostered whether it was that, whether it was having the toys to play with to create our own stories, there's something mm-hmm. about Star Wars that made those young people want to make more Star Wars. And I don't see a lot of that with a lot of other properties.
Well, and I think that it also, although it is an action adventure, it ties back to the stories that we tell ourselves growing up, you know, like about heroes and about, you know, good and bad, and how to resolve the difference between those two, and how to find, you know, to the sequel trilogy, especially focusing on this storytelling, the balance within ourselves as we're growing up, you know. And I would say that, like, in a very Buddha way, everybody is always growing up.
Oh,
we're
yeah.
always finding our own way. Yeah. And we're always trying yeah. to find balance.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it speaks to, like, us as humans. That's why.
The journey is always striving for it, but never actually getting it. It's a continuous process of learning and growing.
Advancing.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. And where could people find you out there on the internet if they happen to be interested in maybe reaching out to you or following you or seeing what you're up to?
Yeah, I have Holocron Keeper Instagram and Twitter accounts. I am a bit irregular about when I post and what I post to, but I actually tend to, I will sometimes respond depending on how my commute is going that morning. So yeah, Instagram, Twitter, you can find me at Holocron Keeper.
Well, thank you so much, Leland.
Well, thank you.
Thank you, everyone, for listening to What the Force. I'm Marie-Claire Gould, your host. Our music is the What the Force theme, orchestral music by Christy Carew for What the Force. We have a Patreon at patreon.com/whattheforce. We like to thank all of our patrons, especially those who love What the Force, Night Huntress, and In Wild Space. We are available on iTunes, Google Play, and other podcatchers, including YouTube. You can connect with us on Twitter at WTForceShow. Feel free to reach out and start a conversation. Cheers!